Kia ora. Welcome back to the Aotearoa Guitar Show. Today I'll be speaking with Hugh Allen of the band Mothra, an Auckland-based three-piece instrumental heavy group. Mothra will be opening for Hochiwich, a tribute to Handsome on the 5th in Wellington and the 6th in Auckland, where Hugh will also be playing second guitar for the headliner. More details on that in the video. So let's get on with it and talk to Hugh. Hey, thanks for taking the time. I really appreciate you taking time to be on the show. This is a show that I'm basically creating to kind of catalog current players and as well as the past history of guitars and amplification and everything that goes into all of those things in New Zealand. And I had a wonderful time seeing you open for Quicksand. That was a fantastic show and was super impressed. That was great. And first experience of Mothra and seeing you guys play, and that was just really a highlight for me. So just wanted to pass that on. So yeah.
Thanks, Wade. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So how long have Mothra been together and how long have you guys been pulling that one off?
Mothra, I think we formed in 2008, or definitely late 2008. So it's quite a while now. What, 15 years?
Yeah.
That was my maths. Something like that.
Close. Yeah.
It's been 16 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's been a while.
Yeah, very nice. So you guys are a three-piece instrumental act, which is really kind of unique these days, but it seems to also be a thing that I've seen a lot of growth in, too, when I think about bands like Animals as Leaders and some of the other three-piece instrumental groups out there. How has that been? Is it harder to get gigs, or is it something that's not so bad?
Yeah, there's definitely a global community of instrumental bands, post-rock or post-metal or avant-garde, sort of more virtuose, I don't know if virtuosic is a word, more bands who are focused more on individual virtuosity, like Animals as Leaders and bands like that. But, you know, that's a real genre, and promoters who want to bring bands, you know, in that genre to New Zealand, we always... If we like the band and want to have a go at opening and being the support act, then we try and get on the bill. So we've had a lot of success opening for a lot of internationals over the years. And, you know, I guess our music leans towards the heavier side of things as well as quiet, ambient and clean, not so heavy side as well. So we've opened for bands who are more post-rock, and we've also played with internationals who are really heavy, like Dillinger Escape Plan, Helmet and Devin Townsend. And we were about to open for Deftones and Gojira and Mastodon. So can swing both ways. You know, it's such a broad genre.
Yeah. And I feel like based on what I've seen, it's a nice pocket that you all sit in where you can kind of span a bit of that genre, which is really cool. Been really impressed with that. And yeah, so did you have a vocalist in the band at one time, or has it always been a three-piece instrumental?
I'll give you a little bit of context on how the band formed if you want.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, so late 2008, I used to have a band with James. I went to school with James, the drummer. And yeah, we had a band maybe a few years before, like around 2003, I think, called Enzyme. And we did have a singer for that band. A friend of mine called Matt, he's actually singing, and we've got a gig coming up with, it's the Handsome tribute.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with that album.
Yep.
And actually that vocalist who was in this band previously that James and I played in early 2000s, 2003, he's singing this gig. So he got the gig singing the Handsome album.
Oh, that's great.
Anyway, that didn't work out, and I just started working on some demos after a few years later, and James came around one day to my flat, and he heard it and said, "That's my genre, I should be playing this," and I was just programming drums at the time. And then Ruben was just a friend. He had actually was coming for some guitar lessons. I've been teaching guitar for a long time, and I just sort of roped him into having a go on the bass, and we kind of never looked back. He took it up well, and that was that. We just started rehearsing, had a lot of fun. Worked on the demos that I'd made, quite a few on the first album that were initially demos that I'd made by myself. And we did trial a lot of vocalists. There were a lot of singers who tried, were really keen, and we'd do gigs early on, and there was always someone would would latch on and be really keen to come along to rehearsal and have a shot. Most people, to be honest, we didn't feel that it made the band sound better. We didn't feel that it made the music any better. And yeah, it kind of just made a focus on the vocal rather than the music that we were writing, and just it didn't make it sound any better than it was. So there were a couple of vocalists who really wrote some great parts to songs, but they couldn't commit to the band. There was Steve from the band Full Code. He jammed with us for a while back in the early days, and he was really good. We wanted to work with Steve, but he shot off to Melbourne. And there were a couple of others, but so we just kept playing and it just kind of worked. I think we found a way to write music and tell a story with our songwriting that wasn't too boring and didn't lack engagement with our vocals. And people would tell us that after, you know, we kept playing. And I remember fans, people at the show saying, "Don't get a singer. It's sweet. We love it." Like, and I was interested in triggering samples and atmospheres, like bands like Neurosis and Isis, who we were really influenced by. And at first I had someone just triggering these sounds on an iPod.
Yeah.
And I would just sort of cue them into, I'd nod at them and say, play that part now. But then this pedal came out. It was the Jamman, Digitech Jamman, and you were able to just trigger samples, load anything into it, trigger whatever you wanted. There's probably much better ones out there now, but I still use that old one. And yeah, so just sort of painting some extra sound over what we were doing to make it more interesting, something to make up maybe for not having vocals. Yeah. But we certainly tried. And actually, the door's always open for singers. We never adverse to people trying to sing. And Richard Simpson, our friend he was in that great band, New Way Home. I used to love that band. I'd go see them in the early 2000s as well. They were mind-blowing, and they disbanded. I don't know. Mate, sometimes you hear a peep from their page from Richard that they're doing something, but pretty much disbanded at this point, I think. He was in City of Souls as well, but he actually recorded a vocal for Myriad. We released that on a 7-inch.
Nice.
He's the only guy who's ever really fully delivered a full song, the vocal. And yeah, but other than that, you were instrumental.
Yeah, that's great. As in the back of my mind, I always keep in mind that, or think about the fact that it also must be really nice to be able to mix a bit better without vocals and guitars competing at the same time. So we'll call that a side benefit, right? So yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Easy to mix live. Yeah, Mark used to always say that from the King's Arms.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was going to ask you, what's your favorite venue that you've played here in the country?
It'd be the King's Arms, but it's obviously gone now. But yeah, we played many shows there. That was really sad when the King's Arms was gone. It was a real hub of culture, and a lot of great bands coming through, international acts playing the King's Arms. It was perfect. So that's probably the best memories of playing shows are at the King's Arms. Where else? We've played Galatos and the Studio and Whammy, of course, and Wine Cellar. I mean, they're all good. We're lucky to have these venues. I don't want to be too picky, but the King's Arms was special, and something was really lost once it was closed.
Nice. Very nice. So what was your first guitar or amplifier rig? What did that look like?
My very first one.
Yeah.
I would have been 14, I think, 14 or 15. And then my dad, he taught me to buy an electric guitar. I was pretty into like Green Day, Dookie and Nirvana and stuff at that point. And I got some crappy Samick electric guitar. Fender, I think it was a Fender copy. It's kind of light blue, turquoise, kind of looked like the Green Day guy's guitar, I think. That was my first electric guitar. Yeah, I was inspired by, there was an independent guitar store called Mainly Guitars in the 90s, and that was just in Takapuna there, and there was a real small community hub of, you know, music fans at the time. And of course, you know, the popular music at the time then was were the grunge bands and alternative metal, and metal like Metallica and Slayer. And so yeah, I got some lessons there from a guy called Stu. Nigel Murphy was teaching there. He played in the band Subtract, that metal band Subtract. And Evan Short was teaching there from Concord Dawn, and he played in like Cobra Khan. I think he was in Subtract as well. Andy Lynch was teaching there. Andy from the Feelers. He's a great guitarist. I went to school with Andy. And Millen Williams, my friend, he was teaching there as well. Millen was in Cobra Khan, Lord of Tigers. He's a great musician. And anyway, those just memories that tie into getting that first guitar. And I think I had a Samick amp as well. That's my first rig. I think the first pedal I got was a DS1, a Boss DS1 from Mainly Guitars. Dave McGrath was the guy who ran Mainly Guitars. So he certainly set me on my way, that place, Mainly Guitars.
Yeah, it sounds like quite the hotbed at the time. So, yeah.
Until the rock shop rolled in and
consumed
and
all.
It under.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have noticed that. I have noticed that pattern, I guess, is a good way to put it, from the rock shop. So is your rig mostly, I mean, other than the, I know you have a lot of the digital effects that you're using for the ambiance bits that you use, what's the split between like a digital and analog rig that you run?
Okay, so fast forward to my actual rig.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Not my rig when I was a teenager. I actually not too many years after that, I got a Jackson guitar. I love that guitar, but we ran over it in a van.
Oof.
We backed over that in a van, sadly, one night, and severed the whole neck. It was in a soft case. But I got hold of an ADA MP1 preamp and a power amp that went with it, the ADA power amp. I was washing dishes at cafes to earn some money. I saved $1,000, and I bought, I bought a stack. I bought a Marshall cab, not JMP1, the ADA MP1. My parents said, "Are you sure you want to spend your money on this?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely." And so I had this big stack sitting right by my bed, and I love that rig. I love the sound of that ADA MP1. Bands like, I think Metallica used that. You can see it in the Nothing Else Matters video. But it was really noisy. It had a great chorus, a beautiful chorus on that ADA MP1, but it was noisy. At least the one I had was noisy. So I eventually changed it out for a JMP1. I bought it for like $600 on Trade Me. I got a JMP1. Chris Monk, from the guitarist from New Way Home, he had a JMP1 and it sounded great. And you know, that was a really popular preamp. Smashing Pumpkins used that. Deftones used that. I think Def Leppard used it. And that just sounded as good as the ADA MP1 or better. And no noise, or you know, very little noise. And I got the power amp. I got, it's a 120. I've still got, that's the same rig I've still got. It's a 120 valve state Marshall power amp. It was just a hell of a lot lighter than the actual valve one. And as I've got older, it's got heavier and heavier. So I'm pleased I chose that. But it does have some resonance and sort of tone shaping features on that power amp. But you know, if I'm not one to change things that aren't broken, so I've always been a fan of that sound. I've kept it ever since. And even the guitars, I cobbled together some money because we realized that when I was in this band with James before Mothra, it was called Enzyme, we would sound horribly out of tune on stage. And so the bassist said, "You need to get a better guitar, something that stays in tune." So the little money I had and could afford from the Trade and Exchange. So this is pre-Trade Me Trade and Exchange. You had to go through the newspaper. I found a Gibson. It wasn't a flash one, but it was called The Ball, a really light version of the Les Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, and I've had it ever since. I've played that ever since as well. And I have never changed the pickups out. I like those pickups. They're hot. They're pretty dark, and you know, I use a lot of feedback. I love using feedback for ambience, and you know, pickups can definitely change for feedback response and things like that.
Sure.
So I've never changed pickups out. I did look them up once, and I can't remember what they're called. Yeah, but that's the rig. The JMP1, the Valve State Marshall Power Amp. I've got two Marshall cabs, 1960 cabs. and I only really use one. And the Gibson, the Paul, I've got two of those, but one of them I use in the band, and the other one for guitar teaching. And I've got a lot of pedals. Yeah. Huge amount of pedals.
Yeah, I was remarking to some friends that were at the show at the catalog of pedals there that were there in front of you. So it was that was pretty epic. Definitely good though. But I mean, the sound is great. I really enjoyed your tone and the way everything kind of combined together sounded spot on. And yeah, been a fan of the JMP1s for long time. Always been one of those things where keep my eye open for one from time to time. But
I'll be looking out to find. It looks like they've gone up in value. Actually, they're over $1,000 now.
If
you want to find them. I got an XFX just for recording, the XFX 2. So I've got one of those, but you know, it's honestly way above my head. It's far too many parameters, and I actually haven't even tried to use it live, but it's pretty handy for recording. So,
yeah, that was actually going to be a question I had, was where do you sit within that modeling and plugins and physical amplifiers, and which do you prefer and why? But it sounds like you've kind of halfway answered that already.
Yeah, I'm into anything that sounds good. So for recording the XFX, for someone like me who I don't have access where I'm living to, you know, to just mic up amps and record loudly with mics. So, you know, the XFX is great. You can pretty much use any virtual mic and position, but not just the XFX. There's piles of stuff now. Yeah, when I bought it, those Neural DSP plugins hadn't come out yet, I don't think. And now there's a lot of those. No, there's a lot of like, what are they? Sponsored artist plugins, like there's the Nolly plugin, and you know, there's a lot of those now, and they sound, I think apparently they're great. There's the Positive Grid stuff, and there's Kemper and Helix and all sorts of modelers now. It's great. It makes it so much easier to record. Probably actually might try and use something like that live, perhaps. We'll give it a shot anyway, for much easier than lugging heavy equipment around all the time.
Yeah.
Just worried about losing the ambience feedback and things like that. But I saw Shehard using only DI at the town hall end of last year. And there was a time they were getting feedback. I saw them going close, Phil Knight going very close to the monitor, stage monitors, to definitely try and get that feedback. So then the look as easy as going up to a big cab. But
yeah,
much more economical to tour and travel with.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I see, and like you're talking about the artist packs, I've seen a lot of folks that are creating their own IRs for speaker cabinets as well. And so you can buy a custom one from them for a few dollars kind of thing. And they're just pulling some extra in on the side, which is really
good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very cool. You kind of gave me the full rundown there on the guitars, but I always ask if there's a guitar or an amplifier that you feel like got away, one that you shouldn't have let go of, or, I mean, I guess it could have been the Jackson that got tread marks over the neck of it. So, but yeah, just curious if there's one of those floating around.
An amp that got away and guitar?
Or guitar, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I did love that Jackson, but I don't know how much I'd like it now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it had a floating bridge. It was cool when I was a teenager. I replaced it with another Jackson, and it was nowhere near as good. I didn't really know much about guitars. I still don't know that much about guitars, really, technically. But I actually still have the body of that guitar that I ran over, so I could maybe try and repair it, but I don't think it's destroyed pretty much. Amps, the ADA MP1 was great, but JMP1 was better. Yeah, I'm not that much of a nerd on gear, to be honest. I tried some big other Marshall amps, like, I don't remember, the JCM 800, the one with the reverb. But I always gravitated towards the more digital preamp sound that the ADA and the JMP1 had. Really precise, defined by definition, especially on low tunings, so much nice definition, which I kind of lost on. For me anyway, it sounded muddy and undefined on the JCM 800. It's probably not, wasn't the right kind of amp. Yeah, so that digital, more digital preamp sound has always been what I've liked.
Yeah, nice.
Very sort nice. Of Deftones, Handsome, Helmet sort of tone. I always like the sound of that.
Yeah, yeah. So what are some of your favorite Aotearoa artists that you listen to?
I saw Wax Chattels play the other night. Do you know them?
I don't know, but...
They were brilliant. They blew my mind. Amazing band. I saw them at Whammy Backroom a few weeks ago. Just insane. I'd seen them a few years ago at the Others Way Festival, and I just remember being just blown away then as well. I didn't remember too much, and I actually didn't venture into their music and listen to it much over the years. But when I saw they were playing again, I remembered how good they were when I saw them, and so I went to it. I got the last ticket, actually, and I don't really know how to describe them, sort of post-punk guitar music without guitars, which is what I thought of, and that's actually what they wrote on their bio as well.
Wow, that's funny.
So bass player, drummer, is the drummer from, he's in Miss June as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like Dillinger Escape Plan with meets Battles, maybe. Battles, that band. So the guy's got the guy who sings, Peter, I think his name is, he's got this big sample synth set up making crazy sounds, really interesting samples and sounds, and doing crazy stuff with his vocals, a lot of heavy delay, but he's controlling it really well. And the drummer's just, he's just out of control, that guy. He's hitting so hard, and very minimal drum kit. It's a tiny drum kit, probably just a floor tom, maybe, and a snare. And then the bass players, you know, some pretty heavy bass, distorted bass at times. But that blew me away, actually, a few weeks ago. I was really stoked on that. Other Kiwi acts, well, there was New Way Home, who aren't together anymore. They were amazing. My friend Mikey plays in the band Outside In. They're really good. They're like progressive rock. I'm actually doing a bit of work with him at the moment, trying to write some parts to his new album.
Oh, great.
We've played with a lot of bands over the years. Most of them have disbanded now. You know, the shelf life of bands is generally a couple of years, I think, or a few years. We used to play with Lord of Tigers. They were great. They're obviously gone. Cobra Khan, they were awesome. I'm sure there's some other bands that I should be thinking of. There's a lot of good bands. Yeah, Aotearoa.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm fairly new to the country, but I was immediately struck with basically the diversity and the amount of community that there is within the band and live music community here. So I'm on my own learning journey, and cataloging this is part of that. So
a band I really like is Ginzu and the State Knives. Ginzu and the State Knives.
That one,
awesome band.
That one has crossed my desk. I have not heard yet, though. So, but yeah.
They're awesome, and they keep releasing these songs with these videos. I don't know where they get the videos from, but they must pull them from somewhere. The kind of cartoon, kind of humorous visuals to their. It's great.
No, that's great. I'll definitely,
big fan of them.
Definitely check that one out. So, yeah, I was going to ask who you believe the most unsung player or musician that the rest of the world should be hearing about from here.
From New Zealand?
Yeah, from New Zealand.
Unsung.
Yeah.
Like should be mainstream or should be popular.
Should be popular, yeah.
I don't know, really. Like those bands I just referenced, just bands that spring to mind from the sort of underground scene that I know around here. So I don't, all those bands are great, in my opinion. I think New Way Home, they should have had huge success, especially in their early days as a four-piece. They had Tristan on drums. I think he drummed for Blacklist after that. And, yeah, they're amazing. It was a shame. They disbanded. They replaced Tristan with Scott after a while. He was also great. And they got a second guitarist. I personally felt the first lineup was something that had a bit more magic to it. Yeah, Your Way Home, awesome. I've still got their first CD somewhere.
Nice.
Anomaly. Yeah.
Very nice. That's fantastic. Is there new material coming, new recording from Mothra?
Yes, there is a lot, actually. We take forever. We have a whole new album finished, just needs to be mastered, and also an EP. So EP of 5 songs, I think, and the album's got 12 songs on it. So we've been working for years, just chipping away at that. You know, life gets busy. Ruben and James have got families, and we're all self-employed as well. So, you know, it's lucky to, just fortunate to still be going and have found a way to sustain the band. We take big breaks, and then we quite selective on gigs, and just found a way to sort of keep the band alive without burning it out. And we just, you know, we get on really well. We share a lot of humor. There's just a lot of humor that goes on, a lot of jokes when we rehearse, and, you know, but we take it seriously as well. And what was the question?
That was just about the new material. So,
yeah. Oh, new material. Yeah. Sorry. I wandered off a bit there. Yeah. So album in the can and an EP, and yeah, we'll get it out. We'll get it out soon. I'd like to get a music video for it out. We've got a good friend, my friend Sean Layden. He's in the Netherlands. He made the 2 videos that we released for the beginning in Splinters, but he's pretty busy with his, he's a professional videographer. He might make something for us. It would also be nice to get some kind of distribution. Don't know if it'll be possible, but we'll probably try and do that. There might be a label somewhere that's likes the album enough to want to release it. But if not, we'll release it ourselves again. And yeah, it would be good to get something out soon, at least even a teaser, just one track. But really happy with it. Happy with the EP. Just need to push it over the line.
Yeah, that's great. That I'm looking forward to it for sure. So yeah, I'll be probably bothering you about the date. No, maybe I'll just be that little conscience on you asking <Yeah. laughs> when it's coming. So yeah, that's fantastic. I made it out of the quicksand show before I had a chance to, because I realized the other day that like all my t-shirts are falling apart, and I'm like, I need some more t-shirts, and I really wish I'd picked up a Mothra t-shirt. So are you guys gonna have some merch available at the Handsome show?
Yeah, we do have merch. All my pretty much sold out of vinyl, I think, of Decision Process. I don't think there's many left, but we've got some 7 inches left, CDs, and yeah, we've got t-shirts.
Nice.
We've got t-shirts. Yeah,
if you've got some vinyl, I'll probably be finding out how to grab some of that too. Yeah, so when you guys actually land your gigs with, I don't play out, by the way. I'm more of a sit at home and noodle and record some stuff and see where that takes me. But when you guys do line up those gigs, do you get contacted usually by the promoters because they know it's a good fit?
Sometimes, yep. Mm-hmm. So for Quicksand, we were.
Nice.
Yeah, it just depends, yep. Or Mastodon and Gojira, which was support acts were cancelled, we were contacted for that. Usually we submit. I just submit to the promoter, or I might know the promoter. I might even know the band. So it just depends, but could be either or.
Nice.
Yeah. So Ben from Valhalla, and he's, you know, he's amazing. He's bringing so many bands. It's great. He's just seems like a full time job for him, and running the event Valhalla. And Jason from Wax Star, he did Quicksand. He's got Sparta coming, and of course they had the Handsome tribute with Peter Mengetti. So it's good to have these guys bringing gigs in.
Yeah,
there's a few Australian ones. Sometimes there's the guy from Your Mate Bookings, and there's been a few over the years who have come and gone. Actually,
of course, yeah.
They keep the scene alive. These guys bringing in the, you know, bands of this genre. So hats off to them.
Yeah. I was going to ask, like, how COVID impacted everything that you do, actually. And is there some meaningful change that came out of that, of the pandemic for you?
Yeah, well, we had the Deftones gig. So, yeah, we were 2 days out from opening for Deftones, and that was cancelled because they were playing the Download Festival in Australia. I think My Chemical Romance was headlining, and they pulled out. As soon as they pulled out, that Download collapsed, and that meant Deftones weren't coming, and yep, none of those bands were coming. I think there was Baroness were also coming, maybe Faith No More. So that was a real bummer. That would have been our biggest gig for sure.
Yeah.
And we had been rehearsing pretty hard up until then. And so we just didn't rehearse for quite a while over the pandemic. But I kept working on the album, on the studio stuff, and actually had a bit more time to do that and more time to finish recording. So that was a plus.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I actually didn't mind the, I quite enjoyed the quiet around here.
Yeah, we, yep, we totally comment on that every once in a while when, you know, either the planes are going over, or, you know, a whole crew of motorcycles goes by on the road. It's like, sometimes I miss lockdown.
Yeah. But, you know, it was devastating for the music, the live music industry.
Yeah.
It took a long time to come right because it kind of kept opening up and then people were just scared to go out. No one wanted to go out, certainly not in a big crowd. Yeah. I saw Tool played just before the pandemic, just before lockdown happened here. It must have been sort of March 2020, and the Pixies. And then I think there was the WOMAD Festival this time of year in 2020, and then that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was madness, but it's all good now, finally.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of bands coming in.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I was all masked up for the show. I think I was one of two people there, but I've got immunocompromised folks in the house, so I can't take a whole lot of chances. Oh, yeah. So
I actually got COVID straight after the Quicksand gig for the first time. I hadn't had it.
Yeah.
And quite a few of my friends did as well. So must have been a rife mothership that night.
Yeah. Glad I was masked up. That's
yeah.
Very, very glad.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And so you said you teach lessons. Is that the day job?
Yep. I've been a guitar teacher for 20 years, I think, roundabout. So yeah, I've been teaching guitar privately and a couple of schools around here for many years. I also run a little band program in two primary schools here in Devonport.
Oh, nice.
Just getting kids playing in bands at lunchtime. We rehearse and then do performances, do end of term shows. We actually played at a school fair yesterday. Yeah, and we play a lot of songs. There's White Stripes and we do Eye of the Tiger, Taylor Swift, Post Malone, Nirvana sometimes, whatever. Are trying to accommodate the requests of the children.
Right, right. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, lots of music related stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
And I do all the mixing, record a lot of recording as well for the band.
Mm-hmm. And do you guys record in a studio or do you record more at home kind of thing?
We do the drums in the studio, of course. Pretty fine art recording drums.
Yeah.
Well. So we did the drums with Dave Rhodes down at the depot here. There's a studio here in Devonport. Dave Rhodes took care of that. But I did all the guitars myself because I've got the Axe FX. So if you know how to use it and dial in a good tone, it's a great tool.
That's fantastic.
And the bass, we recorded the bass ourselves as well. Actually just used an SM57 and it sounded great. The bass sounds sounds really good. So. I just did that in my teaching space where I teach. I've got a studio in Devonport.
Yeah.
Just set up Ruben's rig and position that SM57 and a DI actually, but sounds really good.
Yeah, that's great. That's really great. Yeah, I have one of the Two Notes attenuators, and then I load up. I got some of the Celestion IRs, so it's nice. I can run my 50 water into that, and then run that directly into the audio interface and then it's not, you know, rattling the neighbors around. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that works out pretty well. But I also have the ToneX application from IK Multimedia that I mess around with as well.
Yeah,
which is kind of fun. So
it's great. We're so lucky to have all this technology at our fingertips.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Yeah, I did an experiment about creating my own IR for actually a cabinet I built from scratch as well, and that was quite the experience. I'm still not happy with it. I don't think it actually captured it the way I want it to, so it's fun. It's basically keeps me going on this kind of thing. So yeah.
Wow. You made your own IR?
Yeah. Using Logic, I could just create an impulse response that for the cabinet itself. And I mic'd it up two different, because the cabinet has a mismatch of speakers. So it's got a V30 and G1265. So kind of a slightly different flavor out of each of those. And I mic'd them up with two different mics as well, and then blended them together and created a stereo IR actually out of it. So sounds okay, but I think it was the first one I've ever even tried to do. So I think there's more experimentation needed there. But yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I'm not very technical with that stuff. Zoran, he's a really good engineer, a producer guy in Auckland. I think he's out west. He told me to get, what are they? Can't remember the company that made these IRs. Can't think of it, but I always, Zoran's my guy if I need advice on a plugin.
Nice.
Or some gear, what IRs to use.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Zoran was in New Way Home for a while. He was when they got two guitarists.
Okay.
But he plays a huge role in the scene as well. He's always recording bands. He's always taking care of bands' recording needs.
Now, do you use...
Shout out.
Yeah, no doubt. Do you use a lot of alternate tunings when you play? What does that usually look like?
Yeah, a lot, actually. Almost every song is in a different tuning that night. And they're all just mostly inspired by other bands. So Isis on Oceanic, I think the first song is the beginning and the end. Or it's because they just use 6-string guitars. I'm a big fan of what can be done on a 6-string guitar without using 7 strings and 8 strings. You got enough frets already on a 6-string. But they knock the Adam Jones did it on Parabola as well on Tool. He knocks the heavy E string down to an F sharp anyway for Isis. And on Parabola, I think it's B and E. And so we have a few songs similar to that, not quite the same. And, along those lines. And what a drop A. Neurosis did a lot of that. Some of them are even different. I'll tweak the heavy E down to a C sharp and maybe another string as well, just to sort of open the instrument up and get some sounds and chords that you can't achieve even as a standard tuning. But that's the beauty of the guitar. And
right.
You can manipulate it into into different tunings and really expand the potential of the chords that and melodies that you can create.
Yeah.
So yeah, always exploring with different tunings. And I've been working on a song recently, but it's just in standard. Occasionally stumble across an idea that I find interesting enough in standard tuning. There's a lot you can do in standard tuning. Actually, funnily enough, don't have any songs in drop D. for years I would play in drop D. Back in the day, but yeah, a lot of drop B, drop A, drop F sharp, drop C sharp variations and tweaking the higher strings as well sometimes. But, I only use one guitar live and have to be careful the order of the tunings because your guitar will get upset if you tend to need to start with the lower tunings first. It will be more stable as you tune up through the set rather than the other way around.
Right.
You'll come to a point where your guitar would go quite out of tune when you're abusing it that way with tuning down too far, too fast and things like that.
Yeah. And I noticed you at the tuner quite a bit during the show. And I thought to myself, like, it's either got to be alternative tunings or like, he's got to get some new gear kind of thing. Cause it's just not staying in tune. But yeah, I kind of assumed that it was definitely alternative tunings. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of old tunings. What was there that night? It would have been the double F sharp, and then B and F sharp, and then C sharp, and then double A for the last two, and the last one's also double drop A and a C and a D down to a C. So every song was a different tuning. But funnily enough, I've never got it wrong. I don't think ever. I've never started playing a song and hadn't tuned correctly ever.
That's great.
16 years. Yeah. But I try to trigger an interesting soundscape and atmosphere while I'm tuning.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Not just have dead silence. I saw Isis do that. Actually, Isis did that in 2007. They played at the King's Arms with Jacob. And I noticed them just having this amazing sound when they were tuning out in between songs. And I thought, I want to do that. Yeah, so we do that. But a friend of mine actually said he didn't like it. Yeah, right. He said, can you just stop the sound just for a moment?
I thought it was nice. I thought it all sounded good and made everything feel a bit more cohesive, I think. So,
Yeah, keep the flow going.
Yeah.
Especially with our vocals. We don't have to, there's not much banter going on know, over the mic. So, something's good.
Yeah, that is good. Yeah, and the other thing I like about it too is that I see a lot of folks talking about, like, you really need a completely different set of guitar if you're going to be, playing most of your songs in a lower tuning. It's also nice seeing folks not do that and it working, because it's more of, I think there's sometimes a bit too much purity in that concept of needing it to, this is my drop D guitar and that is the only guitar that shall do that, because nothing else can sound like that. But I like the versatility comment that you made there. It's pretty spot on.
Yeah. I've got enough gear to carry as is the thing about a second guitar.
Yeah.
But I put quite a lot of relief in the neck of that Gibson guitar years ago. And, it's crazily enough, it handles low tuning and standard. So I don't know. I don't quite know how, but you would think it wouldn't be able to do both. The luthier who put the relief in, he said, oh, you can't have it both ways. You want it to be able to handle these strange low tunings. It's not going to stay in tune and standard, but it actually does.
Yeah.
So I'll leave it as is, which I have. I've just left it.
Yeah. That actually led me to another question about, I was going to ask you, string gauge. Like what gauge of strings do you typically use?
I'm using 54s, 10 to 54s, I think. The yellow pack, Ernie Balls, beefy slinkies, but I actually changed the A out from a 42 to a 48. So I buy single packs of 48s and put them into the A string. Because when I was tuning the A down years ago to maybe a D on the A, it was too loose. It couldn't handle it. So the 48 just gives it a bit more stability, because I am tuning that A string down quite a lot as well. To what am I tuning it down to? E and F sharp.
Okay.
Sometimes D.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's it. So 10 to 54 and 48 instead of 42 on the A string.
Nice. Yeah, I saw Paul Gilbert talking about what gauge strings he uses, and he was talking about how light of a gauge that he actually uses, because then he can leave the action really high so that he can play slide better. At the same time as it, with a light string, he can still mash it down really easily. So I was like, that's a interesting thought process there. So
that is, yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's always hard to use a slide in guitars unless you raise the action.
Yeah. One thing I have noticed is that playing with a lot heavier gauge strings, this having stainless steel frets tends to make it feel like a lighter gauge, because things are just slippery across the fretboard. So that's another thing where I'm constantly on the lookout for another guitar with stainless frets, because I
stainless frets.
Yeah, I actually really, really enjoyed the guitar that I got to play that had stainless frets on it. So that was super. It just, again, it felt like a lighter gauge, because everything was so, you go to do a bend or some vibrato and they just slide right over it like it's butter. So that was kind of neat. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know much about frets other than the different sizes, but the ones on my guitar are pretty, they're quite low and flat, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah. And they're pretty worn down now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plays good.
Yeah. That's what matters. So.
That's what matters. Yeah.
That's what matters. Awesome. Hey, we're coming up to the top of the hour there. I really, again, really appreciate your time on this.
Appreciate it.
Looking forward to getting this one edited and out there as well. This is my second call, so thank you. Appreciate that. It's a whole new thing for me, but it's something that I'm invested in and just obsessed, I guess, is a good way to put it. Yeah. So, yeah.
Good on you, Wade. That's great. It's awesome to get something like this happening.
Yeah.
There's not enough of them happening locally.
Yeah, and it's definitely that. That's exactly it, right? So, and I mean, you've rattled off so many names now. I'm like inventorying them all, and of course, we'd be going back through the recording and writing everything down. So, more people to contact and reach out to for sure. So,
yeah.
That's cool. I talked to Glenn Evans from Mr. Glenn's Pickups a couple of weeks ago, and that was the very first one. And Glenn's amazing, and he was laughing pretty hard about the fact that, you know, when I mentioned the community, he's like, "Yeah, we all know each other, every one of us." So,
he's not wrong.
It is
very, very tight, man.
Yeah, it is New Zealand after all. So, thanks again. Can't thank you enough. And I'm gonna try to get out to the Handsome Show. If I can, we'll see how everybody's doing here at the house. So that's April 6th?
April the 6th at Whammy Bar. Yep. It's Swallow the Rat's playing, Mothra's opening, and then it's Handsome, and I'm playing guitar. It's Hotchy Witch, but playing the Handsome album in its entirety.
Nice.
With Peter Mengetti. So he's one of my all-time favorites, favorite players from the early Helmet albums and the Handsome album. So try and make it to that. That'll be great. And then it's Wellington on the 5th. Wellington at Valhalla on Friday the 5th of April.
Nice. Very nice. Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Cool.
Awesome. Right. Hey, thanks a lot, Hugh. And like I said, I'll send you a follow-up message and let you know when it's all live.
Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Wade.
Absolutely.
Nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you. I hope to talk to you soon.
Cool.
Yeah,
talk soon.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Cheers, Wade. Bye.
Thanks again for stopping by the Aotearoa Guitar Show. Tune in for episode 3, where I'll be talking to Simon Gottlieb, musician and amp technician from Bogan Boutique Amplifiers. Until next time, that's us.